Let's go in-depth on Iowa State with the Des Moines Register.
It's time
for Cyclone Insider on 1460 KXNO.
Hello and welcome to the Cyclone Insider Radio Hour from the Des Moines Register here on 106.3 FM and 1460 KXNO. I'm Travis Hines, joined as always by the esteemed Randy Peterson. Randy, how are you on this lovely Tuesday?
Fine. Esteemed? That's interesting. I don't think I've ever been called that before, but I don't even know what that means really. But you threw in a word at me earlier in the week that I had to look up too, so you're showing your ears on me.
I like to keep you on your toes and close to a thesaurus. Those are my two daily goals.
You do, trust me.
Iowa anyway, State coach TJ Otzelberger has kept us on our toes with filling out his staff. We learned, I believe last week, that Danielle Robinson was going to be retained as an assistant, a holdover from Steve Prohm's staff. This week, we get the news that Kyle Green is coming over from Northern Iowa, and J.R. Blunt is coming from Colorado State. Kyle obviously has been at UNI for a long, long time, 16 years over three stints. J.R. Blunt has been at Colorado State for the last 3 years, but he did 4 years on the Drake staff, both under Ray Giacoletti and Nico Medved, who he followed to Fort Collins. Randy, this is a double and tripling down on the Midwestern focus, I think, of recruiting for this staff. Kyle Green, a Minneapolis native, again, been in Cedar Falls for 16 years, but also coached at Wisconsin Eau Claire, coached at Marquette. J.R. Blunt is out in Colorado now, but he's from Milwaukee, the same hometown as TJ Otzelberger, played his college basketball for Loyola in Chicago, did his 4 years in Des Moines, also coached in Wisconsin at Stevens Point. So this is, and again, with Danielle Robinson, an Illinois native, who has done really well in Chicago recruiting. This is a TJ Otzelberger stood true to his word of making this a Midwest centric staff in terms of recruiting. You know, the X's and O's components, I think, will be interesting to learn as we go along, but at least from a recruiting standpoint, they've really, you know, showed their hand of what they're going to do recruiting. And that's going to be Minnesota, Wisconsin, Illinois, and Iowa are going to be the central focus of where they're going to cast their recruiting nets.
Yeah. And if people are concerned about that, TJ's got a pretty good net nationally. He's got, especially out west, he knows the territory out west, and he's also clued in obviously in the Midwest. It's been his comfort zone. But TJ has recruited nationally. So given that, I think it's a good makeup of a staff. D. Rob, as you know as well as I do, was doing a large portion of the game planning under Steve, at least in the more recent years for Steve. So, I mean, D. Rob's got all that down. I mean, if you're an assistant coach at this level anyway, you're multifaceted. You can do a lot of things. So I'm not even that concerned about the X's and O's right now, because you need players. First of all, you need players, and then you need, and then you work with the X's and O's, and hopefully, fingers crossed, this off season will be more like 2 years ago, or 2 years ago and years before than last year, where new basketball teams, for example, like Iowa State or whoever that may be, can get together and work out. Whereas last year they could just work out in small pods. But I like the fact that I like Kyle's background. I like JR's background. He worked at Drake with Nico. I mean, the Giacoletti thing, I don't think he learned a whole lot there. But worked with Nico for a year, and then was well respected enough to go to Colorado. So he might have some recruiting ties out there as well. All in all, I think we just have to wait and see how it works. Don't judge it on what happens this year, but give it a couple right now. I think it's a thumbs up.
Yeah, and I think too, you judge it based on the previous staff's success or lack thereof by not emphasizing the Midwest. You know, I think a lot of time, energy, and resources were used trying to secure players from the Southeast, which is where much of that staff under Steve Prohm had spent most of their lives and careers. And I just frankly don't think, I know that that was not a success. You know, their best recruiting class they had was three guys from Chicago and one from Oshkosh, Wisconsin. The players that they had from the Southeast, you know, for the most part, have largely transferred out of the program over the last 4 or 5 years, with, you know, few exceptions there. And I think, you know, just talking to other coaches that are in the SEC, Randy, you know, about Iowa State's recruiting down there, you know, they would consistently make the point that Iowa State is just playing so much catch up anytime they try to go into the SEC or into the Southeast, excuse me, because you have so many SEC schools down there. You have the ACC, but it's just really hard for a Midwestern school in Iowa playing in the Big 12 to go down and get, you know, nationally Big 12 level recruits. And I think it's just much more palatable to try to do that in the Midwest. You know, I think TJ Otzelberger was very intentional about echoing Matt Campbell and saying this was going to be the Midwest option if you want to play in the Big 12. That's obviously been successful for Campbell. And I think that was intentional on Otzelberger's part to echo that. And I think it makes sense. You look at who the Iowa State's best players have been over the years, a lot of them hail from the Midwest. Is that exclusive? No, clearly not. But I think that is where you have your foundation and you go and build out. And to your point that there will still be national recruiting, I imagine Canada will probably be a place that Iowa State goes and looks frequently. I think East Coast, think Texas, you know, maybe a little bit out west to your point about J.R. Blount. But I think this is just such a more natural fit for Iowa State where you're just not playing catch up with these recruits like they were with these Southeastern kids, that there's going to be more familiarity. There's obviously going to be, you know, regional benefits of having your family be able to watch you play more frequently. So I think this just makes a lot of sense normally and certainly in response to what the staff was trying to do under Steve Prohm. And I tweeted this and I've said this before, it would be really interesting to me to see what Kyle Green's impact is in the Twin Cities area, where we know there is so much talent that Iowa State has tried to mine in the last decade or so to really no success. You know, they got Royce White on the rebound on the transfer from Minnesota, you know, back in Hoiberg's first year. But beyond that, they have not had success bringing any players down, 3 hours, excuse me, down I-35. Kyle Green is from Minnesota. A lot of recruiting ties up there. Obviously, UNI has done really well up there with mid-major recruits. So that'll be interesting. And then obviously Wisconsin will be a huge area of focus for this staff, which brings us, Randy, to the next kind of overarching as we look at the coaching carousel spinning elsewhere. Let's start with Texas, with Shaka Smart leaving Texas, which if Chris Beard ends up in Texas, I think that's a huge win for Iowa State to knock Texas Tech down a peg while you're still, you know, have to deal with Texas. You know, they're going to be a factor no matter who's the coach there. So I think that it's a positive for Iowa State if Beard goes there and Texas Tech comes back to the pack a little bit. But Shaka Smart going to Milwaukee to coach Marquette is going to make the Wisconsin recruiting, I think, a little bit more interesting and maybe a little bit more competitive, at least certainly early on in Shaka's tenure there. Net positive or net negative for Iowa State to see Shaka Smart leave Texas, potentially get Chris Beard into Austin and maybe make recruiting in Wisconsin a little bit more competitive?
That's a great point. And I think it's I don't know about a net negative, but it's certainly not. It's certainly going to make Iowa. It's certainly more competitive, and you know, and we're forgetting about the Badgers too. And although it seems like they're not, I don't look at their roster that closely, but it doesn't seem like they do the greatest of job in their own state. And that's just from an outsider looking in, and I may be way off on that one. But yeah, with Shaka now probably recruiting, Wisconsin, I would guess. He's going to recruit Wisconsin. He'd better recruit Wisconsin. You've got TJ up there, who TJ who knows Wisconsin. He's from Wisconsin. You got JR who knows Wisconsin. So I think schools are going to put a full court press on Wisconsin. Both schools, meaning Iowa State and Marquette. So I guess it's too early for me to say whether it's a negative for Iowa State. It's certainly going to make Iowa State competitive. It's going to make them work harder up there. And not to say they haven't worked hard in the past. Do not get me wrong. I mean, you got Matt Thomas and you've got Tyrese and Christofferson and Deontay Garrett and you know, the Marquette transfer passed. Those were TJ guys, by the way. So I think it's going to be interesting to keep an eye on, maybe keep a scorecard even, but I want to give it some more time, but it's certainly intriguing and it adds some something to watch for in that process. I want to add this. When's the last solid, good basketball player Iowa State got from Ames High School? I mean, let's not forget right here at home also. They went to one of TJ's first stops or phone calls or Zoom calls, whatever it was right there at Ames High School. They've got to do a good job at home too. That would help to do a good job right here at home. And there are some players in the state of Iowa as well as the junior colleges. So.
Yeah. You're alluding there to Taman Lipsey, the junior from Ames High School. He's a really interesting case because, I mean, he was a kid that was on his way to potential five-star status, you know, maybe blue bloods getting involved. He was playing with USA Basketball, but then tears his ACL the summer before his sophomore year. Then as a junior, obviously this season was just, he had a great season, but it kind of, I think, flew under the radar a little bit. With a COVID season, it just felt like everything was a little harried, at least from an exposure standpoint, with fewer fans in the stands, coaches not being able to get out to games. So it'll be interesting to see where his recruitment goes. You know, I think he's got a lot of affinity for Iowa State University. Nebraska is an interesting player in that recruitment because, you know, I think Taman would tell you that Fred Hoiberg has kind of been his idol growing up, that breaking Fred's Ames High records was one of his huge goals, you know, as a high school athlete. So that'll be an interesting recruitment to see unfold. I think this will be a huge summer for him. We'll see what the rules are going to be for recruiting for colleges this year, if they'll be able to get out on the road. I tend to think that they will, but the recruiting calendar might have to shift a little bit. I think he's certainly a huge priority. The kid from Caledonia, Minnesota, King is a huge priority. And number one, Randy, I think, is still back in Wisconsin with Tyrese Hunter. We have not heard from Tyrese Hunter since the coaching change. You know, we've also seen Iowa State not make any point guard offers on the recruiting trail, whether it's a high school kid or transfers. So I think that's pretty indicative that they're spending a lot of time and effort trying to keep him in the fold. We'll see what happens. And like I said, we just haven't heard from him, so we don't know. But to me, that's priority number one. And it has to be for a lot of different reasons, because you're putting so much emphasis on the Midwest and Wisconsin specifically with the staff that TJ Otzelberger has put together. You keep Danielle Robinson, who was part of Hunter's recruitment under Steve Prohm. You desperately need a point guard for next year. And if you can get a top 35 kid from a place where you really want to have a lot of success recruiting, that would be huge. So to me, he is the first kind of building block that we need to see if it's going to make its way to Ames, Iowa, to really have a good feeling about what kind of season this is going to be for Iowa State and what kind of, you know, start that the staff is going to get. Both on the recruiting trail and on the court, I think, frankly.
You know, yeah, and we've talked about this before. I think there's probably players in the Iowa junior college ranks as well that Steve did not look at. The previous staff did. I don't think looked at those guys at all. If you need immediate help, I mean, there's probably players there, and golly knows this program is going to need some immediate help. Granted, you don't want to fill it full of all guys like that. I mean, you want to try to build a foundation while getting transfers. But my gosh, I don't think Iowa State fans could withstand another 0-18 in the Big 12. So I really think that you need some proven, tested players, decent, proven players to come into the program, like a Jalen Coleman's Lands did last year, like Javen did occasionally. He had decent games, and I think there's still some talent there, but you need that. You need somebody to come in and be a backbone who's been there and done that. And I don't know whether anybody on the roster right now has proven they can do that consistently, other than Rashear. And we certainly don't know what his status is going forward. The last thing we saw was he's committed to Iowa State. We've not seen anything since. So I just think we just wait and see what happens there. But going back to your point, getting Hunter is huge. And if they don't get Hunter, then that might be a red flag. That just may be something to look at and something to scratch your head about and wonder what exactly happened there, given all of Iowa State's connections to Milwaukee, to Wisconsin, to the upper Midwest. So I think that's, like you said, I think that's the first piece that you have to get. And then once you've got your roster filled out, you've got to go back to Lipsy, keep him in the fold along anyway, and get him. I think he's a must get for Iowa State, especially in a new program. And yeah, it'd be committing early, I believe, but nonetheless, because right now it's about finding players, but it's also about perception of what's going on. And as we know, recruits read the internet. They know what's going on. So I think going forward, like you said, Iowa State's got to full court press on as much full court press as you can put on Hunter right now and go from there.
Randy, I want to go back for a second about the Texas job opening. Oklahoma remains open after Lon Kruger's kind of surprise retirement. That, man, TJ Otzelberger set that up well. Hires Kruger's son as an assistant, who gets elevated when TJ comes to the Big 12, and Lon Kruger retires to go back to Las Vegas. Talk about setting that up. But Oklahoma's open. Texas is open. Those are two monster jobs, which, you know, lead to quite a bit of disruption in the Big 12 that we haven't seen really for the last 5 years. The league has been pretty stable in its coaching ranks. But what is your feeling of what the league is going to look like once those hires get filled? Again, you know, if Chris Beard takes the Texas job, or what does Texas maybe try to go after Scott Drew, who's now in the Final Four? I think that one's probably less likely, but you're seeing Scott Drew's name attached everywhere. Chris Beard makes a lot of sense. And if it's not those guys, they're still probably going to go out, spend a lot of money and hire a good coach. Same with Oklahoma. But to me, I think we're seeing a level of disruption that's going to be probably pretty good for Iowa State when you're coming off a 2-22 season, when you've got a new coach. As much, I don't want to say chaos, but as much upheaval in the league as you can see is probably a positive for Iowa State as they try to reload here under TJ Otzelberger.
It's certainly not a negative, Travis. I've not seen anything, a whole lot out of Texas Tech regarding Beard. I don't know what they're doing to try to keep him. I don't have any idea, but my guess is that he is a UT guy. My guess is that's where he ends up. And it's totally a guess. Texas can throw the ATM machine at him. And they probably will if they want. They did with football. I don't see why they wouldn't do it with basketball. And also, given the fact that they've got a new arena opening, and granted, it's not a huge arena. It's, what is it, 7,500, 8,000 seats, something along those lines. they've got that opening up in 2 years, I believe it is. So they want to make a splashy hire. And they want to, it sounds like they're trying to make basketball something less than the other sport at men's basketball, less than something more than it just being the other sport at Texas. So why not throw everything at Chris Beard? And then, like you said earlier, yeah, that would bring Texas Tech back to what Texas Tech was a while back before Beard got there. I'm really intrigued. Oklahoma. I have no clue, you know, what they're going to do as far as a coach is concerned. You see Turgeon's name mentioned. Regardless, they're not going to get anybody that got as much out of his players as he's pretty darn good. And I'm sorry I'm sad to see him go. He's a good guy. And you're right. TJ set that up perfectly for him. I'm wondering if Kruger's son wouldn't have got that job, would Kruger be coaching at OU now? I don't know.
I think it's a really good question. I would think yes, but who knows? It's a unique situation where he's had so much success over so many decades now that to be able to go and enjoy retirement and grandkids and your son getting his first head coaching job was probably too much to pass up. Next on the Cyclone Insider Radio Hour from the Des Moines Register, we're talking to Mike Dom, the South Dakota State legend who scored 3,000 points and was recruited multiple times by new Iowa State coach TJ Otzelberger. Mike Dom will give his thoughts about what Iowa State is getting in its new men's basketball coach when we come back.
Everything you need to know about Iowa State, it's Cyclone Insider with the Des Moines Register on 1460 KXNO.
Welcome back to the Cyclone Insider Radio Hour from the Des Moines Register here on 106.3 FM and 1460 KXNO. And we'll welcome on now South Dakota State legend Mike Dom, now playing professionally over in Spain. Mike, I appreciate you making some time for me today.
Hey, I appreciate you having me on. I'm excited to do it.
Reading your bio, it would take most of this interview to go down the whole list of awards, but a 3,000-point scorer at South Dakota State, three-time Summit League player of the year, four-time first-team All-Summit League player, went to multiple NCAA tournaments with South Dakota State, and for our purposes on this podcast, spent your last 3 years there with TJ Otzelberger, who is now the head coach at Iowa State. So just wanted to pick your brain a little bit about your experiences with TJ. And I think I'd like to start with, he is walking into probably a different situation in Iowa State than he did with you guys at South Dakota State, where you guys were coming off a run of success. Where here it's more of an immediate rebuild. But I wanted you to go back and talk a little bit about what your initial impressions were with TJ up there in Brookings, because I know, giving you a lot of attention was probably priority number one for him.
Yeah, with the whole hiring process right after Coach Nagy left South Dakota State, obviously it was super hard, and a lot of us guys didn't know what was going to happen, and we've never been through that before. So I remember the first couple of coaches they brought in, we got to do interviews with them in the locker room, and I couldn't remember the names of the first couple, but the moment TJ stepped in, we could just tell. The guy had a great vibe. He had you could feel the energy coming off of him. And for us, after that interview with us as a team, and then we got to do some one-on-one interviews with him too. It was a no-brainer choice for us to all, tell our AD that, TJ is definitely the best fit for this job. And I just remember thinking to myself, at that point I was thinking about transferring. I didn't know if I wanted to stay, but the moment they hired TJ, I know that he was going to be someone who would help me, at that time and continue to help me throughout the future of reaching my goals, helping my teammates reach their goals. And he was just definitely the head coach that we wanted.
What was his message to you guys consistently, I guess, in those first weeks and months about what the program was going to look like, both on and off the floor?
Yeah. And what really impressed us right away actually is, you know, he came in with so much outside information. Obviously no one told him anything about any of us. And he, and you could just tell the guy did his research on every single one of us. He knew, you know, he had the background of us. He'd watched lots of games. He knew how we played. So you could just tell right away, one, that he just cared. He really cared about his job. He really cared about what he was doing. And I think for us, you know, we always talked a lot about buying into, you know, each other, the coaching staff. And that was really the main focus when he first got there, is we just all needed to buy in into one goal, winning games. And I think that was really just something so simple like that, and working hard every day is what made it easy for us to just enjoy him as a coach, enjoy our teammates, enjoy every day of going to practice. You know, there was real no set in stone expectations. Coach just wanted the most out of us each and every day. And I think that he got the most out of us.
What was the process like of turning that for him, do you think, into a TJ Otzelberger team? Because obviously he walked in to a good situation, to where you guys knew what you were doing, but to really put his imprint, was there a time where it felt like, okay, now this is, we're really doing, you know, he's got us pointing in the direction he wants us to be going in?
Yeah. You know, I remember, you know, he first gets there, and then, you know, previous coach Nagy, very, very, structured with offense, defense. This is what we do. We're following this. And that worked for us. That worked for us with the group of guys we had. And then obviously, you know, once those seniors left that year, Coach Otz came in. I couldn't necessarily say there was a definitive point in time when it's like, okay, this is what Coach Otz is talking about. Like, this is what we're going to do that becomes successful. But I remember that first year we struggled so much at the start of the season to get wins in general. And I think his first Division I win as a head coach wasn't until like December in a tournament we were playing in Sioux Falls. And I think at that moment is when we kind of just bought in, like I said, just bought into what he was saying, and just bought into, you know, believing in each other as teams and as a coaching staff and just trying to do the best that we can with what we have. And I think at that point is when we really realized, you know, this guy's awesome and let's do what he says and let's work hard.
Obviously, you guys had a ton of team success, 3 regular season summit championships, went to 2 NCAA tournaments. What would you say if an Iowa State player called you up and said, you know, what should I expect as this thing unfolds of what TJ Otzelberger is like for a head coach?
Expect amazing things. You know, TJ is one of the best coaches I've ever had. He's one of the hardest working coaches I've ever had. I mean, talk about a guy who is up at the gym at 4 a.m. by himself working out and then turning around and he's in the office an hour later working on scouting, working on, you know, what he can do to better position his players in order for them to be successful at the collegiate level and beyond that. You know, from that point on, Coach Otz is just someone who really, really cares. He cares about the community, cares about, you know, the coaching staff he's working with. He really cares about his players. And then obviously at the end of the day, he cares about being successful. And that's just such a driving and motivating factor for, you know, a coach that he needs to have. And with him being, you know, so young still, that dude has so much energy. And I think what guys would realize what he's going to bring is he's just going to bring the best out of you every single day. You know, it's not like he's going to be on your case, but if he needs to, he will. He really likes to, you know, get to know and understand his players and what is going to benefit those players is what he's going to bring to the table each and every day. So I think he's an amazing player coach. He's going to be able to just get the most out of his guys at any given time.
I think the way that you guys played at South Dakota State is probably going to be more the style of play that Iowa State would like to play now than what TJ had at UNLV, probably just from a roster standpoint. But what was the way that offense specifically was really structured around, you know, you being a matchup problem? Obviously, you know, David Jenkins was really good for you guys while he was there. You know, how did that offense, how was it structured with your guys' individual talents in mind to get the most out of that group rather than maybe being a system like you see at other schools?
Yeah, that just goes into, you know, Coach Otz seeing the options that he has and taking complete advantage of them. You know, like you said, we had a huge mismatch problem with me, you know, with me being able to play out on the perimeter and going to the post. And he saw that the moment he came in. I remember our one-on-one film session, he met with me and he said, I want to use you all over the court because there's teams where you can play inside. They have smaller bigs, or there's a team where you're going to play outside. You can, you know, beat your man off the dribble. And I think coach just does a great job of reading, especially on offense, of reading what options he has and what opportunities he can take advantage of as a, you know, as a team or as a player. And he's going to put those players in the situation to just be completely comfortable in doing what they do. So, you know, like you said, with David Jenkins too, obviously it was nice for me to compliment off me whenever I would get double teamed. It was easy to, you know, kick the ball to someone like DJ or any of the other players, Skylar Reed, to hit open shots. So I think what's going to be best is coach is going to see the opportunities and advantages he has and be able to just, you know, just take it and run with it and create, you know, the kind of offense he wants to create.
You redshirted your freshman year at South Dakota State. You graduated after your fourth year. That fifth year, you could have probably gone to any program in the country and decided to stay at South Dakota State. And I know the community at large was a big part of that decision for you and your teammates. But how did TJ fit into that for you to stay at the Summit League when you could have been playing at a Power Five conference, you know, with more exposure, different kind of opportunities available for you? You know, how was he able to keep you that fifth year?
Yeah, you know, like you said, it was really three big factors. It was community, my teammates, and the coaching staff. And, you know, once I got to really, really know Coach Ott and get to know his family, get to know, you know, everything that he's about, I was 100% in on Coach Ott. There was actually more of a chance, I think, of me transferring the year Coach Nagy left than there would have been me, you know, trying to grad transfer. But it was, for me, it was such an easy decision just because of the commitment and just all around aspects that Coach Ott brought to the table. I knew that he was literally benefiting me on the basketball court, outside of basketball, becoming just a better man in general, life experiences and everything beyond basketball too. And me continuing my professional career, I knew TJ was definitely the guy that was going to help me get there and help best prepare me just with his past knowledge, his past players that he's had. And him just being such a great guy and a great coach, I would have done anything that guy needed me to do. So I was just 100% bought in on having Coach Ott's my final year. And that's what I wanted.
How do you think, you know, obviously he's done it now in the Summit League and was at the Mountain West for the last 2 years. How does his style translate to the Big 12 or to high major basketball, do you think?
I think it's going to translate perfectly. You know, he understands basketball at a different level, I feel like, than some college coaches, in a sense of he's willing to adapt to what he needs to do to win. And he'll make decisions on the fly. Sometimes they're good, sometimes they're bad, but he's always willing to learn from, you know, what he's doing. And I think that his style of play is going to be, one, just a fun style of play. If you're a player playing under his system, you're going to love it because you're going to be getting a lot of shots. You're going to be scoring a lot of points. And then when it comes down to it on the defensive end too, you know, you're going to get bought into what he's talking about and you're going to find ways to, you know, play defense. But offensively, it's going to translate, you know, tremendously. And, you know, like we were talking about before, he's going to find ways to put those guys in positions to score and just make them feel so comfortable and confident in what they're doing that they'll just be able to roll through when they're playing.
Now, you've spent the last 10 or 15 minutes talking about what a great coach and great guy TJ is. Do you want to take a minute to roast him a little with one of your favorite or funny Coach Otzelberger stories?
Yeah, man, this is tough. I have a couple. One, I know the Iowa State fans might not know us, but TJ's, he's always walking around on his tippy toes. He wants to make sure that he's a little bit taller than what he seems. And he's always making sure he's getting some good calf exercises in. So if you see him around town, he's always probably bouncing up and down a little bit more than usual, especially now with this new job. But he's always on his tippy toes. I'm trying to think of a couple other ones that he would do. I mean, between that or just between going into the gym and seeing him going crazy in the weight room, that'll be another thing. Is I think a couple times you'll walk into the weight room, he'll have his cutoff sleeves on. You'll be like, you'll think, is that really Coach Ott's over there? And Coach is, he's just got this grind. He's drinking his protein shakes all the time. And he's just over there busting out some curls or some calf raises. But no, Coach, he's a great guy. He's a funny guy. I think that obviously a lot of people already know that at Iowa State, but you know, he's a hilarious person.
Mike Dom playing professionally now in Spain after a record-breaking career at South Dakota State under TJ Otzelberger his final 3 years there. Mike, appreciate the time. Thanks for joining me.
No problem. Appreciate it.
That'll do it for the Cyclone Insider Radio Hour from the Des Moines Register here on 106.3 FM and 1460 KXNO. For Randy Peterson, I'm Travis Hines. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next week.